This is the Best Run Podcast, brought to you by SAP.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of the Best Run Podcast, brought to you by SAP. Today in the studio, we've got three special guests. We've got Dr. Kim Oosthuizen, who's been with us before. So welcome back, Kim. And Kim's the Innovation Principal for Ecosystem Platform Office at SAP. Andrew Birmingham, who's the editor of TechEd for MI3 Australia. Welcome, Andrew. And we also have Professor Amin Beheshti, who's a professor and director of the Center for Applied Artificial Intelligence at Macquarie University. Welcome, Amin.
It's a pleasure.
I'd like you all to just give a little bit of a background about yourselves. If we start with you, Amin.
Yeah, sure. I'm a full professor of data science and director for Center for Applied Artificial Intelligence at Macquarie University. We are very interested in advancing the state of the art in AI, specifically focusing on applied versions, helping organizations understand their big data, use it in a smart way, connect that to process automation and improvement. So that's some of the activities that we have in the centers.
How about you, Kim?
So I work at SAP, as Rashinka mentioned, and we look after how we can best use process and usability from an AI perspective, and how we can really help our customers transform by using new intelligent technologies. So that's my role.
And Andrew, we were just joking before, that's usually you asking me the questions, but we reversed today. How about yourself?
So I'm a journalist in the sort of digital and technology space. I'm sort of professionally ignorant. So I sort of, in one sense, know less about AI than anyone around the table. My job is just to find out what other people know.
So to kick off, we will talk about ChatGPT because that's obviously the flavour of the month. But just to kick off, Amin, if you could just tell us, what is generative AI and what's its common use currently in the context of content?
Yeah. So to provide a brief background, first we need to understand what is intelligence. So intelligence is the ability to acquire and apply knowledge and skills. So considering that we have three main components for artificial intelligence: knowledge, experience, and creativity. And based on that, we have three main AI systems. So analytical AI is specifically focused on the problem of understanding the data and help organizations extract insight from that. Simple example could be predicting the number of students in university for next semester, or even it can be more complex, rating, ranking, for example, recommender systems. The second type of AI system is cognitive, specifically focused on decision making and help organizations choosing the best next steps, specifically helping knowledge workers in those organizations. And based on that, there are lots of opportunities to mimic the knowledge of domain experts in the field and then use that, to, let's say, for example, annotate and enrich, the knowledge that we already have. Just going back to the knowledge component, we have, as humans, we are very lucky to have an abstract language and focus on collective learning. So we are the only species that are able to transfer the knowledge to next generations. And then some part of that knowledge is the experience and best practices, that we develop over time. So knowledge, experience, and the third component is creativity for intelligence. This is where generative AI and ChatGPT are focusing on. So creativity part focus on generating any specific type of information or task that, as humans, we can generate. So for example, if I can generate a thesis, a document, an email, a social media post, if let's say, for example, as a graphic designer, I'm able to generate, an image. If let's say, for example, I can, for example, use my voice, to talk, generate, the similar voice, for another person. So these are some examples of, generating a content, but it's not only generating the content, but also focusing on generating new processes and activities. So again, as human, anything that we can do, generative AI, focus on, just copying that. And then the next step, more focusing on the creativity part, it can do much, much better. So for example, now we have, for example, artificial general intelligence, and the main goal is not to specifically focus on innovating on one specific task, but also, an AI that is able, to do, any specific task at a time. Yeah.
And Andrew, I know you've been researching ChatGPT and you've written a few articles recently. Can you tell us what's scary and exciting about it at the same time?
So I think let's start with the exciting side of it. I think we're about to move into a period of exponential growth after a period of exponential growth. So I think the next 10 years will blow away a lot of what we've seen in the over the last 10 years. Now, exactly what that looks like, we don't know, because this technology is very new. In terms of the things that, if you like, are scary about it, I think the real issue is we just can't imagine yet. So we've had technology which has been in the lab, it's been controlled, it's been run by people who understood what they were doing. It's now loose in the savannah, and we're just about to let 6 billion humans loose in this technology. And humans aren't always the best in that sort of situation. So I think the unforeseen consequences is going to be interesting.
And Kim, your perspective?
So what excites me most about it is that it has brought artificial intelligence to everyone, and they can actually use the data and use the platforms we've got available to actually see how cool it is and how it can be used in society. It can also help save quite a bit of time, and that's really exciting, because everyone in business now, which really helps us, is talking about AI and how it can be used in their business processes. I think what scares me is probably that everyone can use it, as what Andrew said. Similarly, if you use it and you don't really have the previous knowledge or context, when you use it, you can actually spread misinformation, because it's not 100% accurate. It can give you wrongful information, and you want to actually understand that the way you use their tools are correct. And then there's more that comes with that, and businesses can actually have issues in the future.
Did you have anything to add, Amit?
Yeah, so, you know, whenever we have a new technology, you know, there's an opportunity for misuse. So, you know, I always, you know, compare all these innovations from AI point of view to few decades ago when we had, you know, the notion of PC. So PC changed the processes in personal and business life. We had web, for example, you know, it did the same thing. Now it's time for AI in general, and in a specific, you know, generative AI, because it will provide lots of, you know, huge opportunities. ChatGPT is a good example of generating a textual content, but for example, we have DALL-E, again, from OpenAI, which is the company generating these things, you know, generating images, for example. We have Valley from Microsoft that is able to copying, for example, different voices. So you can have your voice, let's say, speaking in another language, you know, fluently. But just consider, you know, about the misuse applications. Let's say, for example, from voice point of view, someone could be talking about, you know, any specific thing, even on ethical things and stuff. Same as image, or for example, you know, ChatGPT, which is generating the content. So always it will provide lots of huge opportunities, you know, for humans. Again, compared to the PCs, you know, it changed everything. It added lots of new processes and opportunities. So same as generative AI. So lots of excitement ahead, and at the same time, you know, there's a potential for misuse.
Yeah, as someone who really values creativity, is a worry also that creativity is going to be affected as a result, Andrew?
I don't think it's a thing to worry about. I think it'll be enhanced to a large extent. I think, to the point you're making before, there'll definitely be instances of abuse and misuse and copyright violation and all the rest. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, I think what a lot of, in the world that I'm in at the moment, the creative world, it'll actually create a lot of efficiencies. It'll free up a lot of time for creativity. So I think on that side of it, it's going to be quite a positive side of it. The negative is we need rules around IP. We need rules around the use of content. Very simple example. My brother's a very successful writer, both a novelist and a columnist. And ChatGPT is very good at imitating his writing style. So, you know, you could, if you were an editor who wanted to save themselves $1,000 for a column, have somebody write a half-decent column, put it into the engine and get the engine to spit it out in his voice. Mm. And how do you copyright a style? How do you copyright a voice? So I think that's an interesting issue.
Yeah. You are nodding, Kim?
Yeah, I do tend to agree with that. I think there's a lot of manual tasks that we do in content creation, but it can really help create more creativity and make you more creative by taking over all the manual tasks, such as product recommendations and blog posts and all of that. But again, you need to use it responsibly. And also put your own judgment when you're using these tools from a content creation. So I do think it's a good time, but there's also watch points for that.
Yeah, I can see a lot of students getting quite carried away with their essays. I mean, any comments from you?
Yeah, I think as humans, you know, it's our decision, you know, how we want to use it. So, for example, just consider, you know, social media and mobile phones. So there are some rules, you know, from society. There are some best practices, you know, from experts in the field. There are some controls, for example, from the family. that try to help, for example, children, you know, at the same time that, you know, developing their knowledge around technology, but also, you know, be aware of, you know, what are the challenges that could be. So same thing as a generative AI. So let's say as a student, you know, I can just rely on technology to develop new contents. Over time, you know, I will forget about skills like creativity that, you know, as humans, you know, we have that. Or, you know, we can use that to amplify, you know, the, you know, experience and, for example, capabilities that we have.
So what are the guardrails that we can put in place to make sure that we're not actually stifling that creativity and we're actually getting new ideas to the forefront? Andrew?
It's going to sound strange. I actually think it's almost too early to be defining really strict guardrails at the moment. I think if this is one of those occasions you want people to go and do the things they're going to do within the obvious rules of don't cheat, don't steal, don't do appalling things. But I do think we're going to move to a situation pretty quickly where companies are going to have to establish rules around, you know, do I quote, do I reference the fact that this was generated on a platform? Do I quote GPT as a source, for instance? Those are issues what we're already having internally, and we're sort of discussing those. Interestingly, when we sort of polled the audience about it, we gave them four options, which was, I can't remember all four, but basically opinion was pretty equally divided between the different options we gave them. There was only, I think, about a quarter of people who said, don't bother quoting it, it's just a tool.
Yeah.
So people want to, at this stage, people want to know that the engine's involved.
And Kim, I know that you're a doctor of AI, and so one of the things that I guess that you, I think you had mentioned to me earlier was that AI generated content, is that really something that's original, or is it limited by the data on which it's based?
So how generative AI works is that it's been trained on quite a lot of different data types, such as text, image, video, and all sorts of data parameters. So for instance, something like ChatGPT, it was trained on 175 billion data parameters, which is quite a lot. And all it's doing is it's sort of predicting the next word based on how it was trained on web data and on online book repositories. And I think that's important to note because the data is dependent on the quality and also the quantity on the specific subject matter you're researching. When we talk about originality, in some instances, it can be because the purpose of generative AI is to create new knowledge. So don't agree with that everything is original. So for instance, if we're creating music data that's music and it's creating and producing something completely new that's not been heard before, that can possibly be considered original in the definition of original. But if you are using it to summarize your news articles and to give me a summarized version of news articles or content, no, it's not.
Right. Did you have a view on that, Amin?
Yeah. So let's go back to the three main AI components that I discussed, you know, at the start of the talk, analytical AI, cognitive AI, and generative AI. So let's consider, you know, all these things, you know, could have overlap and then complement each other. So for example, ChatGPT is a very good example of developing the cognitive side. So in cognitive side, you know, we have conversational AI chatbots. You know, before ChatGPT, you know, we really didn't see a very good quality in the output, you know, just talking and interacting with a chatbot. But what, for example, benefits, you know, the ChatGPT is mixing generative AI, you know, with the two, you know, previous AI systems that we had, the cognitive one and the analytical one. So at the same time, you know, we can think about, okay, you know, what sort of, you know, opportunities it can provide. So the first thing is that, you know, just copying human, the same task and activities that we are doing, the same thinking, the same creativity. But, you know, it will get to the point that, you know, it can come up, you know, with some sort of, you know, novel and innovative ideas, because it has access, you know, to the big data from social, open, private, even, for example, some business data. You know, if we want to train it for a domain-specific application, and then at some stage, for example, we can use it to generate new topics in research, for example. So what would be the best next big things, you know, around blockchain and AI and XYZ? So it will come up with some sort of, you know, suggestions. As Kim mentioned, it's just a language model and try to predict, you know, the best keywords. But all these data as an input, you know, many of them is the knowledge part. Many of them are the experience part, which comes, you know, from the best practices and the knowledge that, you know, the domain experts developed over a long time. Let's say if we are able to mimic the knowledge of a person working in a specific industry like health, banking, education, that they develop this knowledge, you know, over their, you know, a biological neural network, and then use that as some sort of input to ChatGPT and generative AI, then it can come up, you know, with some sort of novel ideas.
Right. And are you seeing more common uses for generative AI in industry at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think one of the most interesting things about the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks is how quickly we've all absorbed it into the way that we work. So you've gone from a situation when we started looking at this was really when we came back after Christmas, when it was still that kind of magical, I can't believe the machine can do this, to the conversations we have now. People are just factoring it in. People are using it in the work at the moment, and they'll find the form that kind of works for them. The level of sophistication, the level of knowledge around how the tools is still very limited in terms of how to actually interact with them, which makes sense. But I think that'll develop pretty quickly. And yeah, as we saw with search over a 20-year period, whole industries will develop basically to help us use these tools better.
Yeah. And are you seeing it in your industries that you're in?
Yes, I think just working with it, you can use it sort of to help you with your own knowledge, your own research as a big search engine, which really helps going through content quite quickly and just helping you frame new ideas. I do think in business, we're still trying to figure out where's the best place to apply it and how we integrate it into which processes. And I think that would be what we'll need to focus on next.
Good. And I mean, are you actually using generative AI in your line of work now?
Yeah. So since Transformers introduced in 2017, you know, we started, you know, to do lots of, you know, creative tasks using AI in the projects that we have with industry partners. For example, automating exam markings, you know, as a human, you know, we can, you know, do the exam marking, so as AI. Or for example, you know, in banking, you know, we, you know, try to understand, you know, what are the applications of generative AI in automating processes, in improving processes. So again, going back to the example of PCs that, you know, change the personal and business life, you know, there's a huge opportunity for generative AI to transform, you know, the way that we do businesses in industries. So, you know, new type of, you know, process models, you know, will be generated. So one of the expertise that we have in the center is, you know, business process management, and then revolutionize that using, you know, new technologies like AI. So we will have generative AI at some stage generating new models. So for example, let's say there are lots of processes like, you know, data-centric and knowledge-intensive processes. So it's not a very structured process. And this is the knowledge worker who make decisions on the best next steps. So we will have, you know, generative AI, you know, helping, you know, those knowledge workers, or at some stage, you know, even automating those processes. But the main focus will be to improve those processes. Again, as Andrew mentioned, it's, you know, really early to discuss about the real applications. But, you know, we have seen lots of people, you know, starting from high school students, you know, to experts in the field, try to use generative AI to generate new content, new processes. So we have seen lots of examples in education. And we are thinking it will, you know, transform, you know, how we do education, for example, teaching and learning processes and activities. So generative AI can, for example, help us in personalizing teaching and learning, you know, providing a very interesting and useful content for different types of students. And the goal would be, for example, to help students to be more creative. Because again, creativity, as you know, some main part of intelligence, is something that, you know, humans have. Some people, you know, at earlier stages, you know, identify, you know, where they are good at, but some people need help. But even, you know, if those people, if you can help them properly, you know, by personalizing teaching and learning, you know, we can provide a huge opportunity for them.
Can I just jump in with two anecdotes there? So two examples. The first one is actually, it's a senior executive, but we've published, so I don't think he's going to have a problem. So it's Lucio Ribeiro from Optus, who's head of innovation. He, and when we interviewed him, he told us basically he used ChatGPT to write his appeal on it, and it was a traffic fine. And then he sent us a note saying he'd won based on the submission he put in. So at the other end of the spectrum, my son's applying for jobs and he wants to work in the gaming industry. And I don't think I've ever met him. He's got no interest in the work I do, and I've never mentioned ChatGPT to him, but he actually used ChatGPT to do his job letter and to do his CV. So, like, when it's out there among the kids, you know, it's already on its way.
It's a really good way to change how we get information and content, because it takes such a long time to Google white papers and summarize what it's supposed to do. And it's a really good starting point, and I think that's where I love using it. It gives you just that initial, however always check the information to make sure it is correct.
Yeah, it's really good. It solves a couple of problems for journalists. It solves way of viewing it. One is it solves the blank page problem, which is, oh, I really don't want to do this. And all of a sudden there's 400 words, even if they're rubbish, you can modify them away. But it is brilliant at describing complex ideas simply. So if you have to describe Kubernetes to a marketing manager, that's a hard thing. It actually does that kind of stuff really, really well. So we use it all the time now. Like, it's just factored into the way we operate, and that's after 6 weeks.
Yeah, and you highlighted the example, you know, from your side, you know, generating, you know, using technology to do things and stuff. I think that's why, you know, we need to encourage, you know, everyone use technology, not to stop them, you know, using that specific technology. But of course, you know, there should be some control over that. For example, you know, ChatGPT can easily generate, you know, answer to different types of assignments at university, you know, from, you know, program-based assignments, you know, to essays, etc. But what if we encourage students, you know, to use the technology, but also at the same time be aware of, you know, the misuse and ethics and all those things and stuff. So I think that's the best approach. There was a very interesting, you know, the report shows that most of the, you know, successful startups, you know, started from high school students. So, you know, these new generations, you know, grow up, you know, with technology. They have a different understanding. You know, the type of thinking and creativity developed in their biological neural network, you know, somehow different, you know, from old generations like us. You know, I also compared, you know, to my 18-year-old son, you know, how he's doing, you know, how he's using technology, you know, to do things and stuff. And I'm really amazed, you know, to see these generations, you know, they are quite smarter than us. And at the same time, technologies like, you know, generative AI will help them to be more creative, you know, focusing on, you know, much, much, you know, bigger problems.
So Kim and Andrew's example with his son, so say someone else was applying for the same job, would the ChatGPT generate the same content? Or would...
Oh, it's very dependent on how you question ChatGPT, and I think that is a new skill that will evolve out of this. And we had a chat earlier. There was never a job such as a potential prompt engineer. What is that? It wasn't even around 6 weeks ago, and we're all talking about it. So we could all ask the same question slightly differently, and it will give us a different answer. And I think that's from a education perspective, which makes it quite difficult to catch out the students that just use that. So, I mean, this new skills, the same with all the AI we've got, we need to figure out how do we integrate it into business? Where do we best use it? And then how is it going to change what we do and what different skills we need? And we need to train. If we're content creators and we're using it all the time, we need to train them. How's the best way to get the most out of the tool? Because that's actually where we'll get the benefit.
It was interesting. About probably 4 weeks ago, so 2 weeks into the hype cycle, the state governments all banned the use of ChatGPT by the students. Jump forward to last week, my other son started a university and they just said, go ahead and use it. Basically, I think the state governments made the right choice at that point, and I think they'll have to change that policy eventually. But it was interesting, so talking to another journalist, at the time that story came out about the state schools, the teachers were already using the tool to write the class lessons at the same time. They were telling the kids not to actually use the technology.
So maybe the other thing that we need to add, you know, over time, ChatGPT is getting smarter and smarter, you know, because, you know, we have a notion of reinforcement learning, you know, getting the feedback from real human and trying, you know, to improve the models. So, for example, you know, when we tested ChatGPT in December, in January, you know, some of the questions, you know, the answer was not really correct. But now we see that, you know, this is changing. So the main reason is, you know, different types of data points, you know, that get into the system for training. So, for example, ChatGPT-4, you know, will have, you know, exponential more, you know, data points, you know, to get into the system. But at the same time, you know, we get the feedback loop, you know, from human to improve the models. So over time, you know, we will see, you know, huge improvements in the answers provided.
So can I ask you, this is the limit of my knowledge. So I see what you're saying, look, the more it learns from the humans. The downside to me is that it also learns from the humans. And if you throw 10 million 17-year-old boys at this, you only have to look at how they behave on Discord, and you say you start training the machine on that. Does it actually, is it learning from all those things that humans are whacking into the system?
Yeah, so, you know, let's say, for example, I tested ChatGPT to convert a code in Java, a huge project, you know, convert it into Python. So my code is now there inside in the somewhere, you know, will be used, for example, for generate some suggestions for Java programmers. So whatever questions that you put there, whatever, let's say you are asking for paraphrasing, you know, a paragraph, for example. So all these things, you know, will be also considered as an input there. Plus, if you see, you know, there are opportunities, you know, that you as human, you can provide feedback. So this answer, you know, I'm happy with that, you know, I'm not happy with that, it could be improved, you know, this way, etc. So all these things, you know, will be considered, you know, in the reinforcement learning and deep reinforcement learning, you know, algorithms there to improve the output.
Just switching gears a bit and talking about the future of AI, obviously the worry with any new technology is that human labor is going to be impacted. Do you have a view on that, Kim?
So jobs will change. As with new technologies, we get different roles, we get different perspective, we'll maybe need a chatbot babysitter, I don't know what that role will be called, but we'll need to start looking at the output it's giving us. All roles will adjust to some form. There'll probably be certain roles that will be more impacted than others, but it's also up to the person in that role to learn a new skill, try something new. Like in Australia, we just don't have enough people to do the work we have, and the people we currently have, we can give them jobs that actually add value and move them into more value-added work rather than worrying about doing manual work, research, moving documents from here to there, so we can reuse them to be more productive.
I'm going to give you the journalist answer.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Companies will absolutely use the technology. They'll justify the investment in the technology in the first instance on headcount reduction, as they have for every other piece of technology they've ever introduced. But the long-term view, the reality, the data tells us over time is you end up with more jobs. So I think you have a situation where one person's, the CFO looks at the numbers and says, there was 100 people here, now there's 102, we created two jobs. That's true. If you're one of the 12 people who lost their job because they were replaced by 12 others, you're also correct. So I think that's the reality, and it's the same. It was ever thus with every technology we've introduced. So I think it's got to play its way out.
I mean,
yeah. So I'm going, you know, to answer this question using some examples. So let's go back, you know, to the few decades ago when we had the PCs. So you know, it replaced lots of jobs, but it also provided lots of new opportunities. Mm-hmm. When we had computer networks, for example, you know, before that we had some people, you know, wearing a sneaker and then running in different, you know, the levels of the building, you know, just moving, you know, floppies. So that's why, you know, we call it a sneaker net. And then after that, okay, those jobs, you know, wiped out, and then new jobs, you know, for example, you know, like, for example, network admin, you know, we didn't have before. So I myself, you know, didn't know that, you know, I will ended up being a professor in data science. So let's say 10 years ago, you know, the type of jobs, you know, the type of titles, the type of activities, you know, were quite different. Mm-hmm. So we will see, you know, some jobs, you know, will be replaced. You know, we have been observing that. Let's say, for example, autonomous cars, you know, they are, you know, replacing lots of jobs. But at the same time, again, you know, there will be lots of, you know, new opportunities. And, you know, as humans, you know, I'm sure, you know, we'll take that into consideration.
And I mean, so how do you think companies should prepare for generative AI in the workplace?
Yeah, it's a very important question. Always my answer, you know, to this question, you know, was that we need to have AI strategy. So companies, you know, without AI strategy will be wiped out. So, you know, they need to think about, for example, what will happen to the jobs, how to, let's say, for example, upskill the workers, what sort of jobs, you know, we will require in the next 10 years. Let's say one of the jobs, you know, would be AI supervisor. And there will be new courses, you know, in universities. So let's say go back, you know, a few years ago, we didn't have, you know, let's say Bachelor of Artificial Intelligence, but now we have a Bachelor and Master of Artificial Intelligence. Again, this is all, we can relate it to the knowledge component of AI that we discussed and the collective learning. As I mentioned, and as humans, you know, we are responsible to transform this knowledge to next generation. So that's why we develop, you know, new skills, new courses, new knowledge in the field, and, you know, prepare the next generation, you know, for those specific type of jobs.
Kim, what are you seeing in the companies you deal with?
I do think there's a hype about AI and what it can do, and I think there's not only generative AI, but there's so many applications you can do and use AI for today, and we're still working through that. It's important to understand where you can apply it and where it's going to add value and what the output's going to be. I think that's part of the work we do, is working through companies where's the best way to apply it? And then again, how do you change your way of working around that? And how does it integrate, as I mentioned, into your processes? And how are you going to structure the company around that? You definitely need an AI strategy from the top down. Everyone needs to be aware of what is happening. But with any AI application, it will definitely change and you can adapt the way we work, and it will simplify a lot of work we do today.
So when we did a big ring around of about 20 business leaders who'd actually sort of taken the time to learn the tool, the most common feedback we got from all of them was we've got to basically make sure that the people we hire to use these tools have got the sort of right mindset, right personality set to do it, and we've got to train them to use the tools really well. And a simple example was a marketer basically, and he said, look, you can put a thing in there and ask it to spit out some marketing copy to sell a mobile phone, and it'll be kind of okay, but not great. But if you actually say to it, help me describe the benefits of this particular product for this particular person in this context, it's actually really, really good copy. So it's about, this was the most common feedback, was we've really got to kind of build the capability within our teams to make use of these tools.
And just with the last question, there will be some sectors that will be more challenged than others in using generative AI. Do you have a view on that? I mean, what those sectors would be?
So, you know, I believe that every sector, you know, will be affected, you know, by these new technologies in both good ways and bad ways. That's why, you know, we need to think about regulations and strategies ahead. So, for example, in education, you know, it has the capabilities of even, you know, wiping out universities in the next few years, you know, if the teaching and, you know, the style of teaching and learning, you know, wouldn't change, you know, by universities over time. We will see that, you know, generative AI can easily use in countries that they don't even, you know, have, you know, universities or those type of facilities to train their students there, which is a really good thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, universities, you know, could be think about AI strategy, you know, how to use, you know, generative AI to improve their processes. So mainly what is universities, you know, the main shortcomings at the point in time, you know, is that, you know, we mainly focus on the knowledge component of intelligence. So we started, you know, embedding, you know, experience and best practices by internship programs or, for example, teaming up with industry partners to train students. But the creativity side, you know, of the intelligence is still, you know, we are not really good in training, you know, students to be more creative. That's why mainly all these creativity things and stuff left into research degrees, when this is where, you know, we train students to understand, let's say, problem solving, critical thinking, and be more creative. But we really, really need, you know, to embed that part, you know, from primary schools.
Yeah, and from my perspective, you know, when I was at university, the thing that was the best was getting all the alternative perspectives. So if you're just listening to something that's giving you the content and not hearing from everyone else, then I think that's something that's really lacking. Yeah. Kim?
Do you think also all industries will be impacted? There are some that will be more impacted than others. But if we just look at like customer service, all companies have some form of customer service. And generally, you help a person by answering a question and finding out. And new generative AI tools can start taking that over. So I see the challenges there is plagiarize and how you use the information. Is it private, the information that you're using? Is there any ethical considerations? Will you do harm to your company by using these? And these are all new things we didn't need to consider a couple of weeks ago before these tools came out. So even the legal repercussions of using these tools to answer and using customer service. But I do think we're still figuring it out. But we're going to have to figure it out really soon. And also we would need regulations from a governmental perspective, how we best use these tools.
And closing thoughts from you, Andrew.
Yeah, just on this point, one of the really interesting things is because GPT has had such a big impact, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that that particular form of Gen AI is actually quite a small area. So if you look, do an analysis of where the venture money is going, it's a small subset of where the venture money is going into Gen AI. There was a Gartner report out recently. They talked about one of the areas where the biggest impact will be is actually in drug creation. So they were saying, you know, in terms of the impact by 2027, that's where they see the biggest impact. Now, when you start getting into things like IP, it's one thing to rip off my column, have it rewritten in the voice of Santa Claus or something. It's another thing altogether to go and steal somebody's IP when you're doing drug creation. So I think that's where there's a really interesting sort of story coming that's far beyond ChatGPT.
Okay. Thank you all for joining me in the studio today. It was a really great discussion. And you've been listening to the Best Run Podcast, brought to you by SAP.
You've been listening to the Best Run Podcast, brought to you by SAP.